Welcome to the Stories We Share podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories from several different people who are all following Jesus and the ways that he is working in each one of their lives. You'll hear stories of heartbreak. You'll hear stories of triumph and victory. In all of it, God is working out each one of our stories to show his goodness, his faithfulness, and his love. Our prayer is that you will find hope in the stories we share.
Hey, church family, excited today to have one of our own, Clint Sargent, join us on this month's podcast, and excited for you to hear his story and to hear his journey, not only of basketball, but also of faith. And so every month, we're going to take some time to hear stories of leadership, stories of testimony of God's goodness in our church family, and even beyond the lives of the people in this community. So today, I just want to introduce Clint, and Clint, have you share a little bit about your family and help us get to know you a little bit more.
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me. What a great idea just to get familiar with the church body, you know, obviously inside the building of CCC, but just familiarize all of us with God moments and stories and how he's working amongst, you know, our family. But yeah, I'll share about my most important roles first is being Jill's husband, coming up on 12 years this July. We have four young kiddos, Gracie, who's 9, and then three little boys who are 7. It's CJ, Jordy's 4, and Landry's 2. And obviously now I'm a head coach at Wright State. So God's made me aware of how a heightened awareness of how important my words are becoming, and obviously in those two roles as a husband and a father to our family, and now to the wider public, getting to do things like this and share some of my story and how God's moved. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to getting in the conversation.
Awesome. Clint, tell us about, we could call you a Midwesterner, grew up in Iowa, is that correct?
That's right.
Share a little bit about your days growing up. What was it like to live in the Sargent family?
Yeah, and, grew up in the upper Midwest. Yeah, the upper Midwest.
The upper, Midwest. Okay.
Yeah, I know Ohio claims it. I know you're an Indiana guy.
Well, barely, right?
Closer, yeah. Yeah, upper Midwest, Sioux City, Iowa, born and raised there, went to school at Bishop Heelan. Met Jill, my wife, at South Dakota State, where I played. So I played 4 years at South Dakota State. And I would say for me, really foundational years happened for me in college. In terms of relationships I met there, and really forming years in terms of where I felt like God was really knocking on the door of my heart, and grew up. So went to Bishop Heelan, grew up kind of in the Catholic Church, had a lot of head knowledge of the Bible, but I didn't have a relationship yet. And when I got to college, my dad was sick, went through some life like most people do. He was diagnosed with cancer. So my years at South Dakota State, and when I met Jill, and I was with a coaching staff that through those really hard years of kind of figuring out who you want to be, not what you've kind of been told up until that point, were life-changing years for me. Met Jill, dated her throughout school there at South Dakota State, and then I graduated from South Dakota State, and then went and played professionally. So in between that year of graduation, I proposed to Jill. Praise the Lord, she said yes. And she had her last
that.
Year. Yeah, she had her last year, her senior year. So I went and played a year.
Okay.
And then we got married. She graduated, got married, and then she played a year professionally. So we spent our first year over in Germany together. Playing professionally, and God used that year. He changed my life, opened my eyes, and through that year, so many, just founded so much of our marriage, and then obviously my walk with Christ kind of all started at South Dakota State, and then in Germany, and then my first year of marriage is kind of where it all started.
So it's literally got married, and then first year of marriage was gone, away from family, everything you knew. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was...
That'll grow you up real quick when you have that.
Yeah, you learn quickly how to rely on each other, and that we did. You know, we just really learned how to lean on one another and figure out what do we want our marriage to be, not necessarily what anybody else wants it to be, but just her and I. And it really just opened a lot of doors for us in terms of how we saw the world, and now having young children and how we see things. That year in Germany shaped a lot of it.
That's awesome. We do love you and Jill, and just so thankful you guys are here at the church. And tell me about, back up just for like the love of basketball piece. Was it other sports growing up, or was it just, man, this is always what I wanted to do was basketball? And then when did you realize you're like, I'm pretty good at this and probably could play, you know, at the next level?
Yeah, thankfully, I grew up playing, which we talk about this all the time, youth sports. It's getting harder and harder, I feel like, for young ones to play multiple sports. But I grew up playing football, baseball, hoops. I was a high school quarterback all the way up until I played throughout my senior year.
Nice.
And, you know, my junior and senior year, you know, that's when, you start playing AU. I started being recruited at the Division I level for basketball. So I always, you know, you don't want to get hurt.
I
knew I was going to play at the next level in terms of basketball. But, you know, and I talk about this with our team all the time. There's just something beautiful about a locker room. And each one of them are a little bit different.
Yeah.
But that football locker room, I loved it. You know, I loved the bond, the chemistry going through it, the Friday night lights, you know, and that's why, at least for me, and I see it with our children now, especially CJ, he loves to play sports because of the camaraderie, the brotherhood of it. So I felt like sports, and I see it now, there's such a powerful vehicle there for relationships and impact. And I had that all the way through high school. And then when I got to college, it really took on a whole new meaning for me.
Sure.
Because you're starting to grow up, and there's more stress and pressure, and you get hit with some real life, and then you're really resting on those relationships that thankfully God's kind of put throughout my life, and they've all been wrapped around, not all, but most times, sports. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Man, I'm a kindred spirit in that way for sure. Just the relationship is one of the things that always frustrated me about really anything else I was doing outside of sports. You know, you'd get into church ministry and stuff would be arm's length, or another team outside of, you know, the sports world. And I could never find that sports, you know, that locker room, not the bad side, you know, there's some ugly side that comes with the locker room once in a while, but the healthy side, the relationships that come with that. And I always said, if I'm ever a lead pastor, I want to have that type of camaraderie and just enjoy being with the team I'm with. And that's why I feel like it's been so special here at the church with the team we have now. Although we're not a large, massive church, or, you know, even a large, massive team, it's just a joy to be around our board and our staff. And I get a little taste of that, you know, as time goes on. And of course you are as well, as you're coaching. Tell me the faith journey part, Clint. You had mentioned, you know, Catholic growing up, and then college being those formative spiritual years where you kind of recentered yourself. What was the thing that threw you back in, or was there a group? Was it somebody on the team, a coach?
Well, looking back, you know, and I can see this over many, you know, I was just beautifully and gracefully broken. And you know, God had put a number of people along the way that when I encountered my sin and brokenness, you know, I was relatively wild in high school. You know, I had head knowledge of it. In college, I kind of, again, God put Jill and just very powerful coaches around me. And he just gradually started to break me and show me my sin. And through that, you know, and I just is a beautiful eye-opening, not anything that I did, but he just kept nudging me. And then when I would have those moments like, man, what, I can't make sense of this, I need answers. I need truth. I need understanding of not only my own actions, but you know, my dad was sick my sophomore year. You know, why is this happening? And so that faith journey was just a journey of sin, and then just thankfully him opening my eyes to that in such a graceful way with people that love me for who I was in an honest way. And like I'd said, it kind of all came to a head when Joe and I were in Germany in an honest conversation. And it just, eyes were open, just like I read in the Word. I would read scripture, you know, that I had read all throughout my life. Like, for example, in Genesis, when he says he puts his bow in the sky, and I read that, I'm like, wait a second. Like, the rainbow, they mentioned the rainbow in Genesis, like, and it's just like a simple thing that I had seen over and over and over, but just set up, and it just was God. It was just like giving me these little nuggets of truth.
Yeah.
And like, hey, Clint, I've been here the whole time. I've been right along your side, and now your eyes are open. And you're going to see everything in a completely different way. And, yeah. And it's just been a beautiful process now where he's still doing the same thing just through,
yeah,
beautiful broken moments where I learned to surrender more and more, and it's been a beautiful journey.
I love that. Clint, tell me, obviously, you know, playing in college and then playing overseas, it's just in you, you know, the competitive aspect of sports and basketball for sure, and I love that. And then you realize, you know what, I feel like maybe coaching is in my future. At what point was that? Something you came out of high school thinking I'm going to go play and then coach someday, or what was shaping you into that that mindset?
Yeah, I knew early, and for reasons we've kind of stated, the locker room. I knew, I mean, you know, and I'm biased, but just the environment I get to work in with young people, being competitive, chasing after something. The day-to-day camaraderie you get with young people and your coaching staff, I saw it when I was at South Dakota State in high school. I'm like, wait a second, people get paid to do this. And this is so it started off like, man, I love that.
Yeah.
And then again, through those years at South Dakota State, I'm like, man, you I don't know if there's more influential people than a coach, because you get so many real, raw, vulnerable moments.
That's right.
With young people, because you're in the heat of competition, it's stressful. There's a ton of failure. There's a ton of pain, and through those moments, you get some real opportunities, real windows to speak truth into people.
That's good.
And so I combine all that, and I'm like, yeah, there's nothing more that I would love to do. And then as God slowly took over my life, and now I see it, the platform I have now, and I have had with young people and influence, and you know, there's just and I would say this, having young children, I just think there's an attack on young people and leadership and truth, and people standing in the trenches with the young people. It's never been more important. So now,
right,
I'm looking back already at 8 years as a coach, assistant here at Wright State, now a head coach, and how I feel like he's equipped me to just kind of stand firm in this time, and how we need that. And it's been an awesome journey.
I love that. Tell me, so it was Germany, and then the coaching, your coaching journey took you back to your university that you played at, I believe.
Yep.
And you were there coaching for a while.
Yeah, played 2 years in Germany, and then we had every intention of going back. I mean, we were living in Heidelberg, Germany.
Okay.
You know, we were playing professionally. The lifestyle was, all, you know, Germany, you know, Europe, I feel like they kind of get it in the sense of they kind of work to take a vacation, and it's an easier pace of life. You know, granted, I was playing basketball, so I probably didn't have a true look at it all, but we loved it. We had every intention of going back. We didn't know quite where, so we were back after that first year. My second year playing, we were back in Brookings, and working out and back in the community. And then Coach Nagy, who was the head coach at the time there, said, hey, there's a position. Like, I know you want to coach. Mm-hmm. Before, I was thinking about coming back and being the GA.
Mm-hmm.
But at this time, he's like, you can come back and be the director of operations, which allowed me to bypass more school, entry-level video. You know, you just get to jump right in at a pretty good level at a place where we loved and knew the people and get back home. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we spent 3 years at South Dakota State in that role.
Okay.
That's when we had Gracie, and then we came out here to Ohio, which felt like Germany, quite honestly. It felt like so foreign and so different for us.
Right.
But now, this is 8 years going
you
on.
You got here in, so it's 20, is it 15, 16?
16.
2016. Okay. Yep. So then when you came here, you were Coach Nagy's assistant for how many years was that? Was it seven? Yep. I think you mentioned.
I was an assistant for five, then our associate head coach for the past 3 years.
Okay.
And just have grown up in a lot of ways, here in Ohio, for sure as a coach. But, but came here with Gracie, and now we got four children. And it's life's changed quite a bit in that time.
Yeah. Clint, tell me, obviously, the journey. I mean, it seems like for coaches today, doesn't matter which level you're at, especially the Division I level with the world we live in, that, you know, for a coach to sit down and write out their five-year plan of where they're going to be and what they're going to do, it just seems like there's so much change. And coaches moving around or going with another coach or getting out of coaching in general. And then for you, you know, it's a long time, 7 or 8 years in Wright State. And then this opportunity arises, you know, for you this year. And tell us a little bit about this journey and what it's felt like, been like for you as you've walked this path.
Yeah, it's been incredible. It's been incredible. You know, I would just say the title coach and you know, in our society, coaches get, you know, probably just sports in general, we get put on a pretty large pedestal. Sometimes that's really hard because you're dealing with people watching you and the criticism and you know, just all the attention that comes with it. And I would say through the years, I've understood this, and God's made me aware, you know, anything that could be credited to me. And I've really, you know, whether it's recruiting or wins, losses, I've just seen how God's timing and his hand has been so present.
That's good.
In each one of those places. Mm-hmm. Anything that would say, oh, you're successful, I dig a little deeper and I look back. I'm like, well, if I didn't see that kid at that moment and the timing wasn't just right, or this conversation, or the mood in the room, and you just slowly start to peel back, you know, a resume, so to speak. And I'm sitting there like, Lord, like, you have given me so much. And so what it just has produced, you know, I hope it is just a high level of humility in my heart. And I know he blesses that, and it's fruitful to stand firm and stand there, but it's one of those things, well, how do I become more humble? And I, you know, just to surrender it to him. And I, you know, through these 8 years, I've just tried to do that.
Yeah.
And, been surrounded by a lot of great people, I've been well led and a lot of great players. And now, you know, this past year, I would say before being named the head coach, if you would have rewound to 3 weeks earlier, it was probably the lowest moment in my professional career. And hit a low moment, had a tough loss, a game we shouldn't have lost, but that was just kind of the tip of the iceberg of why it was a difficult season for me and Jill, and just kind of, okay, what's next? Where are we going? We've done an awful lot here at Wright State. We love it here. We love where we live. And you're looking at through the lens of just the professional and coaching, and it's like, man, this stuff, like, I don't know. And then one thing after another happens, and now I'm stepping in to be the head coach, a dream job of influence and impact and responsibility and so I circle back to what I said at the beginning. It's like you know, I can already recognize that God has just moved and mm-hmm. opened doors for me to That's now right. be here. And as I step into all this new responsibility and all these hats I'm wearing, he's shown me already, you know, Clint, just surrender. And yeah. I'm there, surrender it. Even though sometimes that can be so counterintuitive to mm-hmm. for sure a man and a coach, because you think go, got to get this done, that done, and he's That's just right. beautifully shown me, you know, just surrender and I'll be there. So
that's good. You get in that place where you know God's called us to lead, and he's given us a mind, a sound mind to lead. He's given us his spirit to lead and to lead well, spiritually speaking. But at the same time, you know that, but it's like, God, I lead whatever you give me with open hands. And mm-hmm. I know how quickly stuff can be taken away. It's here today and gone tomorrow. And it's just that attitude of, God, I want to be a good steward with what I have, with the season you have me in, and I'm going to do the best I can. And whatever I do, I'm going to do it all for your glory. And so tell me, I want to unpack just for a moment. I didn't give you this as a question, but that low point season, because I feel mm-hmm. like a lot of our listeners today, while they might not be the head coach of a D1 basketball program right now, they certainly know what a low season feels like. And those moments where you just think, God, what are you up to? Or what's next? Or what should I do? You know, sometimes I've shared this on weekend services a lot, that God is a lamp unto our feet, and a lamp doesn't show very many steps out, maybe a couple, maybe five, but it certainly doesn't show you the whole path. And I bet those few weeks after, you know, the season, you felt like your lamp, you might have been holding one, but the bulb was about out and you can't even see the next step. What encouragement would you have for somebody just as a believer and a leader that's going through a season where it's like, man, I just can't see what God's up to, and I kind of feel hopeless?
Yeah. Yeah, I think in that time period, through the encouragement of my wife, I could look back and draw back on previous low moments, you know, seasons where you can certainly relate to, like, yeah, this doesn't look good. You know, whether it may be a health situation, a relational situation, professional, your children, you know, I think that pit in your stomach and that the loneliness you feel, whether you did it or it happened to you, I know when you're, you know, for me, when I can look back and I've seen it with children or professionally speaking, or when we've moved, how he's been faithful. And then you, through that, you can just be steadfast and hold firm to his truth. And I've learned, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for those moments, those seasons where it does feel, because I've just seen that's when he's pruned me and yeah. molded me and turned me into now equipped for something new, even yeah. though in the midst of it, it's like, well, this is awful. Like, I don't know what's going on, but then there's always this, you know, this sense of peace that I felt like he's been faithful before. He'll be faithful again. It's who he is, and that is true. And it's, if you look back at your life, I think for many believers, you can see that and hold on to that.
That's right. It's that, you know, that old Casting Crown songs of praising God in the storm. And man, I'm so glad that's a sermon right there, because those moments where it's like, God, I can't see the faithfulness right now, your goodness. We can all point to moments in our life where God was mm-hmm. so good and so faithful, or showed up at the 12th hour. You know, his timing's not our timing. You felt that, and you've seen that play out for you the last few months. His ways are not our ways, but he is always faithful, and he is always good. I wanted to ask you, you know, just with your team, I feel like every coach has a certain set of values and character traits that they want to see in players and to build in, because you're building young men. Yeah, we're building great basketball players that play at the highest level at Division I. But also you're building future dads, future yeah. owners of businesses, future coaches, future ADs, whatever they may be. And what are some of those things that you that are just, because they're translatable as well. It's not just a basketball characteristic. They translate right. to all of our lives, that you are trying to instill within your team and your coaches in this young era
yeah. as the head coach. Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked that. The big one for us has been humility.
That's good.
And it's a complicated, it can be for athletes and competitive people, and that always has to be there. But just the fruit and the blessing that is in humility is so powerful. And you know, so what my job and what I view it as is I need to develop and I need to help these young men grow. And I know the humble, you see that growth and just talking about that frequently and what it looks like and practically what it looks like, not just describing the word, but showing them and pointing it out and observing it. You know, we'll point out coaching staff members who did this or did that, or players who said this or do that, or body language where, hey, that's true humility. Because I think there's so much there. It breeds just a self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Selflessness, all those things that we know as husbands and fathers, if you don't have that, you know, life can be very difficult.
Yeah.
That's been the main one for us. And because you're right, we just had a former player in here talking to our team he's just finishing up year 11 being a pro, but he's a husband now. Mm-hmm. With two young little girls, and just how quickly that moment comes.
Yes.
And we're always, you know, I'm always pressing into our players to find truth, like figure out what you believe. College, you have to figure out, because now more than, you have more time now than you ever will to wrestle with truth, to figure out what you believe and use the time because quickly there will be people looking to you to help them, whether it's your children, your wife, business, like, well, how do you, and the world's getting only more and more chaotic.
Yeah.
And to understand the chaos, these are all frequent conversations within our locker room. It's just as relevant. It's way more relevant, I would say, than our ball screen coverage and what we're doing in terms of a scheme. It's just how we see the world, how we handle adversity, because ultimately, you know, as a husband, a father, community leader, that's
right.
The job, so to speak.
That's right.
So helping them understand all those things, strive, press into, research, read, communicate, just as much as on those subjects, than just the immediate basketball, got to win, got to get better, all those things. Yes, but they're so secondary.
That's right.
To everything else that's at hand.
Well, that's so good. And, you know, the character trait of humility, that's attractional to people. I mean, mm-hmm. people want to be around leaders that walk in humility, that have some self-awareness, you know, mm-hmm. that aren't arrogant, aren't full of pride. And if you're a part of a team, I mean, that's the only way to go. And I love that characteristic of humility. It's a biblical one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Christ, the Savior of the universe, chose to humble himself, to go to the cross for you and me. And it's just to not follow in that footstep would be to say, I'm not going to truly follow Jesus, you know,
help them understand what that is. And it's not being weak.
That's right.
Being a man, passive and passive aggressive. And like, hey, if you got something to say, step into it in a loving way and speak on the truth. And that, to a healthy locker room, a business, a family, that you have to be willing to sit in that tension of, you know, because I love you and I respect you, I may need to check you on this.
Yeah.
And you can still do that in a humble way, in a loving way, and helping them understand what, you know, in my opinion, what a man, and you said it, and how Jesus was this example for it. He was not a pushover. He wasn't weak. He was right there. He confronted it all, but he did it in a way that nobody, you know, you couldn't be offended necessarily at his tone or how he did it. You would just be offended because you didn't see the truth.
That's right.
But the way he did it was in a loving way, and helping them understand that that's not being quiet or passive, because there's so many bad examples.
Right.
Or even the macho man, you know, like it's got to be my way, or and you know, you just trying to teach them how to enter into some of that conversation where it's it's delicate and it's hard, but doing it with the right heart posture will lead you in the right direction.
That's right.
That's so good. Hey, I want to turn the corner just for a moment. I feel like one of the questions I always loved to, even before we started doing podcasting stuff, was I love hearing, because every leader, whether it's a coach, leader of a company, another pastor, friend, I love hearing who were those mentors, those people in your life that really showed you the ropes when it comes to coaching and in your profession, or maybe somebody that's a lead pastor now, who was somebody that you really looked up to. And then what were some of those character qualities when you think of that person or persons, could be multiple. It's like, I want to see that. I want to take that with me into what I do. Got any of those examples you're willing to share?
Yeah, I have a few. An early teammate of mine, Ben Barron. I was a freshman. He had stepped away for a year, I believe. His dad had died in a car wreck, and he came back. He gave his heart to Christ, and so he was a senior. I was a freshman, and I was young, and I was young and dumb, and he was old, and he, the way Ben came alongside me in those years, I still look back to and really appreciate the way he came alongside me. Coach Nagy, he was my college coach. He was strong. He was honest. He was very direct. And for those conversations, he helped shape a ton of my life. My father-in-law, Tom Young, similar way. He loved me right where I was at. He could probably see, even though I was dating his daughter at the time, like, he's got to grow up here in some areas, but he just loved me and mentored me and was patient with me. And that's such an important piece to coming alongside young people. They don't want to feel like that you're trying to fix them. But you do it in a loving way.
That's right.
The most importantly, my wife. My wife, she's absolutely changed my life in so many ways, in a loving, patient, but truthful and honest way. Just were so much of the guardrails of some years of my life where I could have been a million different ways and in a million different places, but God just used those people and many more to help shape who I am. Yeah.
I love that. Clint, tell me, obviously you're in a job that you love, at a place that you love. You get to coach the game of basketball, which is not much better than that. When you think of getting to the place where you may be done with all that and 20, 30 years down the road, what do you want to be known for? When like your kids look back and they think, when I think of my dad or the people in the community, when I think of Clint Sargent, I didn't put that question on there, but I want to put you on the spot with that one to say, hey, what would be some of those things I'd really like to be known for?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think immediately of the scripture, just feed my sheep. I feel that now more than ever, just so somebody that, wasn't afraid of an honest conversation that stood on the life of Christ, that just lived in a way that they knew Jesus was King and Lord and His Savior. And that was just at the forefront of everything he did. And I guess a man that was absolutely okay with not having the answer, absolutely being okay with having to say sorry in a room, because I know I'm paid now to have all the answers, and I've never been more aware of not having those answers. And I know the more I can just be that example, Jesus will absolutely shine as King of my life, which He is. And I want my kids, I want them to not be relying on dad. I want them to know early on, like, I'm gonna that your relationship with with Jesus and that truth as you navigate this world, like that has to be there. So, you know, that's a tricky walk to have with young kids, but leading in a way that's always at hand would be my hope.
That's so good. I mean, it is obvious that getting to watch you and get to know you and your family the last few years, just that God's hand is on you guys, no doubt. And you've been faithful with a little, and he's given you much now. And I have no doubt that God's going to do great things in and through you guys at Wright State, being the leaders there. I want to close with this, because I feel like there's probably a lot of parents watching this that, all my kids, I don't even know how we're going to do it with youth sports, with the boys all playing on different teams. And we only got really two doing that now, and before long it'll be four. We'll just be running every which way. What advice, I mean, you said it earlier, and I think it is spot on. I mean, as a Division I head basketball coach, people are going to look to you. And what advice would you have, maybe encouraging words to the parents out there that, especially Christ followers that are parents, mm-hmm. when it comes to figuring out balance with youth sports, family time, following Jesus? I feel like that's a loaded question, but I wanted just to have you have a moment to share and speak into that and speak some truth to some parents that may need to hear from somebody at your level.
Yeah, well, I would lead with the truth that I do think, and I've said this many times, I think it's for Jill and I and our marriage, it's been one of the harder things to navigate and figure out, how do you run that race, the best way you can competitively, in a loving way for your children. How do you find that balance? And I think the encouragement would be, I think most days you got to evaluate it, and there's a moving target there for each one of your children. I would encourage parents, as simple as it, to raise your children, and because I just look at all the time, and I know right now with a 9-year-old, 7, 4, and 2, we're never going to have more time in our home together, and how absolutely important that is.
That's
so,
right.
And that's the most important thing. That influence at home is a real thing, and just to be careful of having too much outside of the home as we run these races, because if you look at a full day of school and then a full day of practice and then tournaments on the weekend, all of a sudden I've been aware of this with my schedule. It's like, well, when have they had their dad? But I also think unique, there's never been more of an area where the body of Christ needs to show up. It's in youth sport, because there's a million different ways to go sideways at a youth sporting event or a practice. There's such a platform. I mean, there's such a need for parents to humbly enter in to a practice, to a game, to a side conversation with a parent, a disgruntled parent, like we all are somehow, like a little disgruntled, and handle that in a loving way and speak truth and to put it all in a proper perspective, I would say. Which it all sounds great. I know it's incredibly hard, but I think people are watching how we handle it. Are we going to run a worldly race in pursuit of sports? Which again, I'm a head basketball coach, but I would say it's become a lot of an idol for many. And just a caution there, and know people are watching.
That's good. That's so good. Well, hey, man, just so thankful you're willing to hop on here today and share. I know there's going to be words that are so beneficial to the ears that are going to hear them. And as we wrap up and head off, I just wanted you to share, one, what you're excited about with Wright State basketball this year, and what do we have to look forward to as we get to watch from a distance your program?
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely love the character of our team. So if you just look at the landscape of college basketball and sports in general, there's a lot of NIL, there's a lot of transfer portal, there's a lot of fluidity of rosters. And some of that, I can't, we need a whole new podcast to dissect some of that.
Yeah.
But what I would like people to recognize about our team is we had 8 young men stay here at Wright State. And of all the reasons that, hey, maybe I would look somewhere else, like a coaching change is reasonable. But those 8 chose to stay. We retained a lot of our staff through that transition. And that's just formed a huge bond that I'm really excited. I think it makes us, in terms of motivation and camaraderie, a dangerous team that it doesn't get talked about enough. A lot of it's kind of on paper who you added in the portal, and we added some great kids with a high level of humility that want to come into a program and kind of understand it, not only for themselves, but what's been done and what's already in the room. And I've seen all that firsthand, and it's been incredibly encouraging. It's been, I'd say, the energy, the competitiveness of our team, that's been the foundation of it, and it's real. Because those kids, we have a lot of hard, a lot of the multiple moments of tough losses or failure. Just like I feel like God's used so many of those moments to mold me into who I am. That's been true for our team, and I've seen it kind of unfold. So I'm excited to see what that looks like in terms of winning and losing come next fall.
You guys are just you're in workouts now. Official practice starts what, when?
Yeah, we're in workouts now. We get eight weeks with them in summer. We'll start back up end of August. We have about a month of fall workouts, and then practice will start end of September. Man, the games will be here early November.
That'll be here before you know it.
It already feels like it's here, but I don't know if that's good or bad.
Most days, we don't even know what day it is most days when you have 4 littles and the job you're in and all that. But
that's right.
Well, hey, man, I'm proud of you. We love you and Jill and your family. And just thanks for taking some time. I know you're busy with all the stuff you guys got going on over there. And we just pray God's blessing over you. We look forward to the next basketball season. We'll never have been more and bigger Wright State Raider basketball fans, our entire church, and especially me and my family. And just thanks for taking some time for us today. God bless you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Stories We Share podcast. The Stories We Share is a ministry of Centerville Community Church and is recorded by our lead pastor, Kedrick Hershey. If you have a story that you would like to share, we would love to hear it. Please reach out to us at office@centervillecommunity.org. And be sure to follow us on all of our socials. You can find us pretty much anywhere at Centerville Community. And we'll see you next time on the Stories We Share.